Welcome to Southern Mysteries, the podcast where a couple of chicks from the sticks explore mysteries, myths, and legends of the South.
It was money that lured them into it, and I think they were probably the lowest people in the world morally to do something of this nature. Before they could do anything, the babies had been sold and sent to New York or California.
One of the most infamous child traffickers of the 20th century preyed on the poor and helpless in and around Memphis, Tennessee from the 1920s until 1950. Her cruel and abusive methods led to one of the most notorious unsolved mysteries of the South, Georgia Tan's children, in this episode of Southern Mysteries.
Gonna be all right, no matter what we're troubled by. Swear when this is over, everything gonna be just fine. All right, you rest warm and confident. The best laid plans of mice and men are your first and last defense. All right, all right, all right.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Southern Mysteries Podcast. I'm Shannon Ballard alongside my friend Tracy Lee.
If you're new to the show, welcome and thanks for subscribing and listening. Each episode, we try to share mysteries or myths or legends from a southern state. And we want to say a big thanks to our new fans, not only in America, but also from Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, Germany, and Sweden. I don't know if you understand southern, but we sure are glad you're listening.
Hey, we've been so encouraged and really thankful for the reviews and the comments from new friends that we've connected with on Twitter. If you don't follow us already on Twitter, we're at Mysteries Pod on Twitter and on Facebook. You can find us at Southern Mysteries Podcast on Facebook. And Tracy, we've had some pretty nice reviews come in so far.
I know, y'all are so nice. Like, we got 5 stars from Slow Jen Liz. Well done, already in love. This is a well-researched and well-produced podcast. If you're interested in unexplained, mysterious, weird stuff, I highly recommend it. Super charming, aw, and informative. Loved learning about those eels.
And 5 stars from Mindy Carlos. She says, legends with sweet southern humor. Oh, that's very kind. I just love this pod. It instantly reminded me of a book series I read over and over as a child, 13 Southern Ghosts and Jeffrey. Can't wait for the next episode. Tracy, did you ever read the Katherine Tucker Windham books?
No, is that the 13 Ghosts and Jeffrey?
I can't help but wonder if Mindy has a connection to Alabama, because Katherine Tucker Windham, she's the epitome of a childhood in Alabama, reading those ghost stories, and Jeffrey, who was the ghost that lived in her house.
Oh
my goodness, yeah. That is such a high compliment. Thank you so much, Mindy.
Is it inappropriate to go check out a children's book in the library?
No, go buy them.
I think I'm going
to. Just go check them out.
Awesome. Y'all, we launched a contest to give you the chance to win some Southern Mystery Nuggets, including my favorite nugget, a $100 gift card. So make sure you listen until the end of the episode. Now stop trying to fast forward through with your finger. Listen until the end of the episode and learn how you can win things from us. And hear from some new friends of the show in our sassy podcast pick of the week.
And our sassy podcast pick of the week, there's actually a connection to this story today, to this legendary, unfortunately, true crime story that we're sharing this week. And as Tracy said, you will hear all about that pick towards the end of this episode. But it has a connection to Unsolved Mysteries. And this case was featured in Unsolved Mysteries back in the late 1980s. And some stories are legendary here in the South because of the horrible people and the circumstances attached to them. And that is true of the legendary crime story that we're sharing with you today. It's one of the most infamous unsolved mysteries in the history of Tennessee, really throughout the South. It affected families all over the country who still do not have an identity and are searching for answers. And you're talking about over 60 years later for so many of these families. And it all comes down to one woman, and I call her an evil woman. Her name is Georgia Tan. And this woman left just really a legacy of pain and suffering, and is basically, I mean, in my mind, having researched this woman is the epitome of a monster come to life. She came from a really prominent family here in Mississippi, where Tracy and I live, and she called herself a social worker. But she ran one of America's biggest black market adoption schemes, and she did it out of Memphis. That was her headquarters in the Tennessee Children's Home Society. There were these home societies set up throughout the state, but hers, the one that ran this scheme, was in Memphis. And this was between the years of about, the early 1920s through 1950 that she did this, that she created this whole mess. It's estimated that Georgia Tan and the really powerful people who helped her, and it's an understatement to say powerful, they stole stole over 5,000 children from poor families. They stole them off the street. They stole them from pregnant teen moms who, you know, they would convince you've brought shame on your family. They would tell them they were helping them get them to the hospital when they gave birth. They would be under sedation or just coming out of sedation, convince them to sign paperwork, say something was wrong with their baby. They needed to sign something for their care. And they were signing away their rights and their baby would be gone and they would be told their baby died. They would steal babies and children from daycare centers, like outside in front of daycare centers. They would just walk up, take the kids, steal children from front yards. I mean, there were families across the South that, you know, as word got out of what was happening, they were cowering in fear of their kids, white kids, because she only stole white children because they could get the highest price at the time. And you've got moms that are terrified of their kids playing outside because of people starting to hear, you know, about this legend. They weren't sure if it was true. Back then, it was just a story. And it, a lot of credibility wasn't attached to some of these families because they were poor and people just didn't trust them. Unfortunately, it's this sad, sad story that remains true today. She preyed on the poor because they didn't have the power and the connections to fight back. I mean, Georgia Tam would stop at nothing when it came to stealing those babies and those young children because they were commodities to her. I mean, they were her income. I mean, she had no care or affection or feeling for these kids because it's estimated, and this is low, at least 500 babies died because of lack of care or abuse that they suffered at the hands of Georgia Tam and the people in her organization. They didn't recognize when a child needed care or they just didn't care to get them what they needed. I mean, to say these crimes are shocking to hear about today, it's an understatement. But the truth is, we only have estimates of the number of children that she stole and the number of children who died as a result of what she did because she didn't care. They were just a means to an end. So, Georgia Tan's motivation. What was her motivation for these crimes? I think it's quite obvious. It's money.
Had to be.
It's always money. She did it to sell the babies, and she sold these babies to the rich and to the elite. I mean, a large number of these babies, they went across the country. They were sold and bought by families across the country, but a large portion of them went to, like, Hollywood and went to a lot of celebrities in Hollywood and to New York. I mean, she had their heritage. She had everything. And when you say she robbed these families of their identity, that is also an understatement. But she did it under the guise of the Tan Agency, as she called herself and her people with her. They charged about $5,000 per adoption. She took a majority of that money. And so you're talking about Georgia Tan pocketing that money over all these years. I mean, she ended up with over $1 million of money from these innocent families. And to cover her tracks, Tan and her organization, they falsified adoption records. They destroyed any trace of where these children had come from. And those actions led to generations of families that still have no way of tracing their origin, no way of finding out who their birth families are. If the birth mother found out that the child did live, that she was told had died, there was no way to track that baby down. I mean, you're talking about moms who have now passed away and they died not knowing whatever happened to the children they gave birth to. And so many of them did not make the choice and weren't put in a place to make a decision. That decision was robbed from them and their babies were just taken. And there was just no way to connect them back together. It's so, so sad. And the question has been raised, too, with a lot of the families that adopted these kids. How could you not ask questions about where these kids are coming from? And some families did not know these children had been stolen. Some did and wanted a baby so bad they were willing to ignore it and pay the money. There was a marketplace and they decided to do it. So when we talk about who these adoptive families were, you know, I mentioned some of these were really like they were Hollywood elite. Some of the celebrities that adopted children through the Tan Agency and are associated with Georgia Tan, Joan Crawford, her twin daughters, Kathy and Cynthia, they were adopted. Purchased in 1947. June Allison and Dick Powell, if you're not familiar with them, I mean, they were a Hollywood power couple at the time. Adopted Pamela from the Tan Agency in 1948. And have you ever heard of the pro wrestler Ric Flair?
I have.
Ric Flair. He was one of the kidnapped babies. He was kidnapped. He was stolen from his mom and bought by his adoptive parents about 1949 is when that happened to him. And he's written a book and talked about finding this out and, you know, the shock of finding out you're not only a kidnapped baby, but trying to trace down his roots and his family and the obstacles that came with that. So, I mean, just so many people, so well connected, wow, had these amazing lives in public, yet there was that dark secret attached to.
I think Georgia Tan is the root of all evil. How could she sleep at night knowing that there's a child that's missing their parents and a parent that's missing their child? I can't even conceive that in my mind, to be that money hungry or that callous that you would not care about stealing a child from their parents. Well, I cannot comprehend that.
But you said it, though. You look at these children, you hear this story of, gosh, and it's a low number, 5,000 babies and children stolen. But we look and we see an innocent child, an innocent baby, innocent families. She looked and she saw money. That's all she saw. It was her business, just like a CEO. It was her money, and she didn't care. She didn't want anything getting in the way, or the people around her wouldn't stop her because they were benefiting from it too. And when we say those people were powerful people, like I said before, it's an understatement. She had politicians, she had a judge, police officers, she had hospital workers that were going in to help get those families to like sign that paperwork, get the baby out, get them to the TAN agency and over to the home. And they were all helping her cover up these crimes. The political power, it started with Georgia Tan and this Edward Boss Crump, who had all this political power in the state of Tennessee, particularly in Memphis. He had been the mayor in Memphis. He had served in the House of Representatives for Tennessee. And he would help the TAN agency by sending his cronies to handle disputes. If a family questioned something, if they started asking questions about the children, or someone asked questions about the TAN agency, he would send them out to influence them. In other words, to either pay them off or scare them to death, into getting them to just shut up. And he also influenced laws to be changed to protect Georgia Tan, to make sure she could continue to accomplish what she was accomplishing. It's just unbelievable. Boss Crump, as he was known, he was able to do it. And according to an investigation that did happen years later, he did it with the help of Abe Waldauer. He was the assistant city attorney under Boss Crump. So basically, Boss would go to Abe and say, look, we have a problem. Abe would work out specifically rewriting the laws to cover the TAN agency and Georgia Tan. And many of his writings even, and it goes to the people around her and how they viewed, again, not children, but a business and a commodity, because a lot of his writings refer to these children in this home as merchandise.
Oh, that's just sickening.
I know.
I can't even do it. This sounds like something that you would read about in a small southern town, that you've got a corrupt legislature and a corrupt business person that's doing the whole town. But this is Memphis.
It
this is a big city where they're doing this. That just pisses me off.
I know. Believe me. We're telling the story here now together. But Tracy, have been out of town when I was doing a lot of this research. Normally, we kind of look into stuff together. But I sat at my computer at some points. I was crying. And at some points, I was just cursing up a storm because I was so angry at this woman and these people that pulled this off. But Abe Waldauer, who was helping Boss Crump, he was the attorney not only for Georgia Tan, her personal attorney, along with being the city attorney, but he also was the attorney, you know, representing the best interests of the children at the Tennessee Children's Home Society. And he even refused, and this is so important when it comes to the money aspect, he refused to force the Tennessee Children's Home Society to get a license for the home, saying they didn't need one. That ensured that the records of the home would remain private, out of the hands of the government, out of the hands of the state of Tennessee. And it also ensured that they didn't have to follow the policy for the rest of the state. An adoption fee in the state of Tennessee at this time was $7.
And she was charging $5,000.
$5,000.
Oh, my Lord.
So, again, that goes to the power of the people around Georgia Tan, protecting her, making money off of these families and off of these babies. And the judge who helped Georgia Tan, you think you're angry now. The judge who helped Georgia Tan, it was a woman. Her name was Camille Kelly. She was a juvenile court judge. And the way she would spend things to help Georgia Tan, she would pretend like she was acting in the best interest of these children. And she would claim the best interest was to legally remove the parental rights of these children of the parents and transfer them over to Georgia Tan so she could work on finding the right and the proper family to take them home and to keep them safe. That was how she would portray herself, that she was doing this in the best interest to help out the Tan Agency and the Tennessee Children's Home Society.
Y'all.
I know.
I can't deal with this. I cannot wrap my mind around how they would do. I don't live in this world, obviously, because I'm not a sociopath. Well, not today. I'm not a sociopath, but I cannot imagine how you cannot look at a child and the love that a parent and a child have together and just think that it's, I can't comprehend that.
Well, and unfortunately, there are still people like Georgia Tan preying on families. They may operate in a different way, but human trafficking, child trafficking is still a real thing, and people don't want to believe that it still happens in the United States. They want to think, oh, that's in other countries. But this still happens here all of the time.
You know,
it's important to remember.
I never considered it as trafficking, but that's exactly what it is. Because, you know, you hear it now, and you're like, oh, no, that's horrible. We need to raise money and bring awareness to all that. But this, we look at it, is just heinous, but that's exactly what it is. It's trafficking.
She was a heinous child trafficker.
Yeah.
Yeah, from state to state, literally. You know, when I was looking into this, I was like, how could nobody have tried to stop this woman? Nobody around gets suspicious. But it turns out somebody did try to open an investigation into Georgia Tan, into the Tennessee Children's Home Society. He got suspicious in 1946. His name is Judge Sam O. Bates. He became really suspicious, concerned about the home and about the kids there. Somebody cared about these kids.
Yeah.
He got concerned because the Child Welfare League, they dropped their endorsement for the Tennessee Children's Home Society in 1941. It had been years before. And they did this in their report because they discovered that Tan had been destroying paperwork associated with the adoptions, that she wasn't doing background research about the families that were adopting these children or doing backgrounds on the families the children had come from, with information stating this is why the children should no longer be with them. They just didn't feel there was just cause for a lot of these kids being mm-hmm. taken away, which they knew. They got it. They couldn't prove it, but they knew something was up. So Judge Bates, he had concerns about this. He learned that the Memphis, Tennessee Children's Home Society had engaged in advertising children for adoption. And you can look this up. We'll share a picture on our Southern Mysteries Facebook page. Georgia Tan and her people, there were Christmas ads with pictures of these children that said, wouldn't it be nice to buy a baby and bring it home? I know, it's shocking now, but you're talking about 20s, 30s, 40s in America. Few people would see these ads. And so many who did see them responded to them because they wanted to buy a child. It was an easy way to buy a child. It's shocking. And there was just so little accountability or laws when it came to adoption back then. But the Child Welfare League said, you know, something's just not quite right. And Judge Bates said it too. And he was of the opinion that the Tennessee Children's Home Society had, and I'm quoting here, had failed to follow the advice of its medical advisors in many respects, which had resulted in the unnecessary loss of life of many children, which had been placed with it for the placement for adoption. He was recognizing, and he was trying to warn people that kids had also died, had not only been stolen from their families, but she, like, her lack of caring and lack of policies and accountability had led to the death of children. So Judge Bates, he voices his concerns. He says he wants an investigation. His request, it was ignored. It was eventually dropped. Years later, the governor of Tennessee, he has a report in his hands that says Bates was right to question the home and the practices, but that was years after he began asking all these questions. So in turn, he was made to sound like he was crazy. Judge Bates was. He was hated by people for speaking out against the social worker, this woman that was doing such good for these children, as so many people believe. She spun a story. And people believe that Judge Bates was attacking Georgia Tan and just not acting in the best interests of these kids. Eventually, he's vindicated, but it took a long, long time to get there. Eventually, there were some hopeful adoptive parents that started to also question Georgia Tan's methods. They questioned the newspaper ads. They even went to their local newspapers, and there were a few articles printed with some questions about what she was doing. And objections to Tan's practices. And the heat was on Georgia Tan. She knew She knew things were coming down on her. On September the 12th of 1950, the Memphis Commercial Appeal, the local paper in Memphis, they printed an article that informed the public that the governor of Tennessee had officially, finally opened an investigation into Georgia Tan.
Governor Browning last night began an investigation of a reported $1 million black market in babies by the Shelby County Division of the Tennessee Children's Home Society. The governor said he instituted the investigation after receiving numerous reports that the Memphis office of the Children's Agency was selling babies for profit.
So it's important to point out, Tam was only considered guilty right now and questioned about pocketing money from the state and not kidnapping, because no one knew the full scope of what had been happening. This investigation was just starting. There were new questions. Some things changed very soon after. And the biggest thing that changed is that Georgia Tan literally got away from all of it. She was never prosecuted or made to stand trial, face justice for what she did, because as the investigation was being opened and it had really gotten into full swing, Georgia Tan was diagnosed with uterine cancer.
Karma.
Exactly. Exactly. On September the 15th, keep in mind, September 12th, 1950, the governor announces officially in the paper that there's an investigation open into Georgia Tan. September the 15th, 3 days later, she dies.
Are you kidding?
She died. The state filed charges against the Tennessee Children's Home Society office in Memphis, but she was gone. Never made to face what she did. You think of what she took to the grave with her. So many answers that some families could have had, but she's dead. She's gone.
Well, I guarantee you she's not enjoying her afterlife, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, money can't buy that.
Mm-mm.
Georgia Tan, of course, never had to face the music for her crimes. The Tennessee Children's Home Society, about 2 months later, they closed down, thankfully. It was shut down. And remember the judge, Camille Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah. She announced her retirement as a judge a couple years later, and she also avoided prosecution. You want to guess what happened to her? Died of a stroke in 1955. So she, too, was never forced to answer questions, help give information maybe about families that she had robbed of their children. And she was gone. Just with her goes answer after answer after answer and accountability. It's gone. 1955. It is 2017, and there are still so many families who are searching for answers, and so many of them are frustrated because what happened right after, you know, in the early 1950s, as this investigation is opening, Georgia Tan has died. Camille Kelly has died by the mid-1950s. It makes the news across the United States. It's this big story initially, and then there's no efforts made to reconnect parents with their children. And there's still so many questions today about, why didn't you do anything? Like the state of Tennessee, even at the time, why didn't you do anything to try to find answers? There were still people alive that had worked with her, that had worked in that home, that had worked at the hospitals. If you had continued that investigation out into those areas, what answers could you have given to families? Who could you have reconnected in their generations to be connected together?
But you know what? Maybe let's go on this whole thing about it being a power and money-driven play. If you have prominent people who have adopted these babies, maybe you don't want to open that can of worms. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's wrong and very chicken of the state of Tennessee not to do that. But would you go after Hollywood at that point? And how many parents went into hiding with their children if they thought that the child they purchased would be taken away from them? And hopefully there was some kind of parental bond at that point. But it's just a no-win for anybody and the two women that made it possible. I mean, not that death is not like a bad thing, but I wish that it had come at our hand instead of, you know, it's physical illness.
We're going to have the lawyers check on that. Although I kind of feel the same way. You know, generations later, though, you do still have families who have never been able to find birth parents, grandparents, of course, and in turn just have never had an answer about birth families. And I think that's one of the most natural questions you have, too, when you're adopted. You get to the point in life where you just wonder.
Yeah.
You know, what color eyes did my mom or my dad have? Just little things like that. They never got the answers to. I actually did come across an interview with a gentleman that that had said that he had been adopted, never knew that he had been one of the babies that had been stolen. He never wanted to know his birth parents. He was angry at them.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he had been abandoned and given up. Then he finds out years later He was one of Georgia Tan's children, as they're known, and that his parents didn't have a choice in it. And he was able to track them down. He is one of the miracles because he was able to decide, look, I want to find my family. I want to see if I can find them.
Yeah.
He was able to meet his mother before she passed away. But his father, he never knew him. He never knew siblings. His mother had been through a horrible time because remember, so many of these moms, they were poor.
So many
of them were destitute. So many of them, when you have family members that may have been able, very few cases, been able to track back to the birth moms, but they had passed away, you know, just had fallen on hard times. Imagine psychologically what this does to you when you wanted your baby and somebody steals that baby from you, or you're convinced that that baby died.
You know, I think as a parent, when you know that your child is missing, and I don't think that you're ever whole in that area. You know, you're always wondering and you're always passing people in the street and thinking, is this, you know, don't you think you would as a parent? You never stop looking.
How could you?
Never.
Yeah, that's love. And that I do think that's important to remember, too. And I'm so glad you pointed out, Tracy, because, yeah, those moms love their babies. And unfortunately, those children never knew that love. Mm-hmm. And it's just this innate thing inside of you. No matter who you are, you want to know who your parents are.
Mm-hmm.
For good or bad, you want to know who they are. And I'm not saying it would have been a magical story in each instance. And they would have loved one another and just, you know, like puppies and rainbows and everything's fine. But at least they would have had an answer.
You know, with her, when you said that she was doing false documents and making all these fake documents, we're talking like they didn't have the luxury of computers that we have now to be able to make those documents. So can you imagine just the people that worked for her? She had to have people that did that.
So many victims of Georgia Tan and still so many unsolved mysteries. I will say when it comes to remembering the littlest victims, those who actually died while they were in the quote unquote care of the Tennessee Children's Home Society in Memphis. The Elmwood Cemetery there in Memphis, Tennessee, that is where Georgia Tan had bought a lot and just buried babies unmarked. There was no markings for these babies, nothing to really testify to their lives. And again, we don't know how many babies died in her care. But in 2015, the cemetery, Elmwood Cemetery in Memphis, they erected this monument to the memory of these little ones. And it reads in part, "In memory of the 19 children who finally rest here, unmarked, if not unknown, and all of the hundreds who died under the cold, hard hand of the Tennessee Children's Home Society, their final resting place unknown, their final peace of blessing, the hard lesson of their fate, changed adoption procedure, and law nationwide." At least they've been remembered.
Yeah. That is heartbreaking.
It is. Oh, it's so tough. Any crime, any unsolved mystery like this, it's heartbreaking for the families, but it always goes back for us, and I'm sure as you're listening, when it's kids, it cuts deeper.
It does. And I know, I'm sure families are, well, of course, families are important everywhere, but in the South, we take pride in our family relationships. And I cannot imagine somebody ripping me away from my family or ripping somebody away from our family. I cannot fathom that in my head. You would go to jail in a heartbeat. And if any parent would, if somebody tried to hurt their child.
On December the 13th of 1989, the mystery of Georgia Tan's children was featured in an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. That show, I'm sure, Tracy, your family watched it. My family would gather around together late 80s, early 90s.
Always.
You'd watch Unsolved Mysteries to get terrified and not be able to sleep at night as a child. Well, this week's Sassy Podcast Pick of the Week, it's a podcast that's dedicated solely to Unsolved Mysteries.
It's time for the Sassy Podcast Pick of the Week.
Tracy, that is a beautiful song.
Thank you.
I really love what you did with that.
Weeks. It was hard.
Meet our new friends, Liz and Samantha.
Hey, true crime fans. Do you remember what sparked your interest in true crime? For many of us, it was watching TV shows we shouldn't have been watching as children. Whether you snuck around your parents or they played them for you at the dinner table, we all remember the shows about murder, aliens, and ghosts that captured our attention and kept us up at night.
That's why we think you will love our new podcast, Perhaps It's You, a podcast where we rewatch the show that started it all for us, Unsolved Mysteries.
I'm Liz.
And I'm Samantha.
And we were a couple of weird kids who grew into a couple of weird adults. Each week, we rewatch a classic Robert Stack episode on Amazon Prime.
Follow along with us as we recap each mystery and chat about what was scary, funny, or just plain ridiculous. We rate each episode out of Robert Stacks.
I give our podcast 5 out of 5 Robert Stacks.
And pick our favorite mustache.
Find our podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Perhaps people will love our podcast.
Perhaps it's you!
Friendly warning, they do use a little saucy language in there. I mean, it's language you and I use, but we use it under our breath because we don't want our mama to get on to us. But just a heads up. And we can only hope to get 5 out of 5 stacks for this episode.
Speaking of your 5 out of 5 Robert Stacks that we're hopeful for, we are running a giveaway right now, and we're very excited about this, giving you the chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card in our rate, review, and subscribe giveaway. One grand prize winner is going to get a $100 Amazon gift card. Our second place winner will receive a Southern Mysteries mystery box. Tracy's been putting that together. I saw some of the stuff she brought back from a trip to another southern state.
I did. The truck stop is our best friend.
We promise it's not all truck stop sweat, guaranteed. And a third place winner is actually going to receive a 5-minute feature here on the Southern Mysteries podcast to tell their own favorite Southern mystery story.
It's super easy to enter. Just go to iTunes and give Southern Mysteries podcast a rating of 5 stars if you feel like we deserve it, and subscribe to our podcast and give the podcast a review on iTunes. Once you leave your review, you're all set and entered in the giveaway. But don't worry, if you've already rated and reviewed us, you're automatically entered.
The deadline to enter is Thursday, November 30th at midnight Eastern. So make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe to get yourself entered to win. And we will announce our winners on December the 1st.
Thanks so much for listening. We're back next Monday, November 20th, with a special Thanksgiving episode featuring a legendary turkey from Georgia that refused to lay down and give up for anyone's Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, you're going to want to meet this turkey.
We'll be all right. We're careful what we got to buy. There might be a